This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Health and Living with me, T. Xiao Yik, and my co-host for the Doctor in the House segment, Dr. George Lee, consultant urologist. Hi, George. How are you?
Oh, Xiao Yik, I'm not so happy. You know, it's the return to the normality now. We see the traffic, we see the rain, we see the Friday rush out of the city. So I guess we are seeing the normality and we're back to a lot of the good old days as well.
Good and bad, pros and cons, I think, with that.
Absolutely. Yes. Absolutely. I'm also, a bit happy today that we're keeping our promise, right? I mean, 2 months ago, we did several shows about ivermectins and all sorts of, claims and concerns about ivermectin. And then, of course, Ministry of Health promised that there will be a result, and we're revisiting that.
Yes, yeah, so the Ministry of Health did recently announce the results of their study on ivermectin. They have a catchy little name for their study as well. It's called iTech. We want to look at what exactly were these results and what does it mean for members of the public, especially people who have been either using or considering using ivermectin to treat or prevent COVID-19. And so, to help us understand more about that is returning to our show, Emeritus Professor P.T. Thomas, Executive Dean of the Faculty of Health and Medical Sciences from Taylor's University. Today, he'll be putting on his pharmacy and toxicology hat to help us understand the results of this study. How are you, Prof. Thomas?
Fine. Thank you for having me on the show, Shelley.
Absolutely. So our lines are open. Call us at 03-7733-2900 or WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 with your questions. And later on after the break, we will also bring on to join the conversation Raja Elaine Soraya, immediate past president of the Medical Legal Society of Malaysia. And together with Prof. Thomas, the both of them will help us understand the legal framework, the gaps in enforcement surrounding the availability and the sale of ivermectin that's mostly happening on chat groups and online. But I think, Prof, to start with, can you break down the results of the Ministry of Health's study in layperson's terms, of course, and what it means for us when it comes to whether we should use ivermectin for COVID-19?
Sure, Shavik. Let me just give a little bit of background about the iTech study. It involved 500 patients who were confirmed by RT-PCR tests to be COVID positive. They were all more than 50 years of age. They had at least one comorbidity. So a comorbidity means something like hypertension, which was the most frequent, diabetes, chronic kidney disease, and so on. They had mild to moderate disease, and they were recruited to the trial within the first 7 days of illness. Okay, then these subjects were then randomly allocated to one of either two groups, the standard care group or the standard care plus ivermectin group. So initially, 500 patients recruited, 10 patients dropped out. And finally, we had 249 patients in the standard care group and 241 patients in the ivermectin group. This was carried out at 21 centers throughout the country. And the question the trial wanted to answer was, can administration of ivermectin in early to moderate COVID-19 patients with risk factors prevent progression to severe disease? So it was quite a clear question that they wanted answered. And the results. At the end of the study, it was found that 17.3% of the patients in the standard care group progressed to severe disease, while 21.2% of patients in the ivermectin group progressed to severe disease. Now, at first glance, it may appear that more patients progress to severe disease in the ivermectin group. However, we must bear in mind that this was not a statistically significant difference, which is determined through calculations. And so in this study, although it shows some difference in the numbers, there is a more than 1 in 20 possibility that this difference occurred by chance. And so the study concluded there was no difference in progression to severe disease between the standard care group and the ivermectin group. So if I can state the final conclusion of the study, ivermectin does not prevent progression of mild to moderate COVID-19 to severe disease when administered to high-risk COVID-19 patients during their first week of illness.
Were there any adverse events, in fact, found with the group using ivermectin?
Yes, they were. They had more severe adverse effects. Most of them were relatively mild, and they were mostly gastrointestinal adverse effects like diarrhea.
Ah.
Serious ones.
So that explains the Deputy Health Minister saying that basically, the difference with the ivermectin group is that you're 3 times more likely to get diarrhea.
Yes, there were 3 cases of a little bit more severe, but we don't have the details of what those were.
Prof, were there any fatality?
No, none.
So...
Yes, there were. There were fatalities in both groups, in the ivermectin group and in the standard care group.
Obviously, there are 2 endpoints that we're measuring here. One endpoint is progression to severe disease, and the second endpoint is fatality. Was there any more fatality in ivermectin group or the non-ivermectin group?
Okay, so Dr. George, I need to be clear here that there was only one point that they were looking at. They were only looking at progression. Mortality was not an endpoint. But they did find there was more mortality in the standard care group. There were 10 mortalities, whereas in the ivermectin group, there were 3 mortalities. Now, they could not make any conclusions. So they acknowledged that result that is called the secondary endpoint. That was not what they intended to look. And the study, 500 patients, didn't have the power to make a conclusion. So they concluded again that there was no significant difference between in mortality.
But the primary question that they asked and which they answered was that using ivermectin along with standard treatment protocol will not deter you from progressing to severe COVID-19.
That's right. Exactly
but
right.
Is this study of 500 people, would you consider it sound enough evidence, Prof?
Yes, Yavik. I 500 patients is not a small study. It is actually a large study. And it was done in a group of patients who had the highest risk of progressing to severe disease. And this was shown previously in another Malaysian study published by Benedict and co-workers, that those above 50 years of age had the greatest probability of progression to severe disease and mortality as compared to other patients' group. So this was the right group to do the study. So this was the appropriate group to study. If ivermectin was effective, it would benefit this group the most. Besides that, when a study like this is done, there is something called the power of a study. And based on the power of the study, the number of subjects need to be determined. So that's how they came up with the number of 500. So I don't think more studies need to be done to examine this effect of ivermectin on progression to severe disease.
Sorry, George, go ahead.
Prof, did any of these studies, the results surprise you? I mean, was this within your expectation?
Well, it was just a gut feeling, but I really was looking forward to the results of this study. That to me, it didn't look like all the previous studies. None of them showed that there was an effect of ivermectin in preventing progression. So I was not really surprised, but at the same time, I was looking forward to a Malaysian study and a well-done study.
And then the second question to that is that compared to the other international studies from other countries, is this more or less in keeping with other findings?
Yes, it is. There are especially 2 other studies that have similar, not exactly the same, but similar type of patients. One is called the Together study that was done in Brazil. And that had more than 1,300 patients recruited. And the other was the EVCOR study that was done in Argentina, which had 500 patients. And they had come to the similar conclusions.
So we have a listener who's asking, since the side effects are mild, and I think that may need to be qualified, but he says, you know, why not still try it? Because previously it was said to be a dangerous drug. What is the advice here, Prof?
Well, there are two things, shall we? Just because something has mild side effects, it doesn't mean you should use it if it is not effective. That, you know, that doesn't make sense in therapeutics. Just because something has no side effects, oh, we try it anyway. You only try things that you know are safe, efficacious, and of quality. That is.
Oh, it's not Smarties that you're taking, right?
That's right. That's right.
It's not candy, yeah.
Another part of the question, Shavik, sorry, I forgot that.
Well, you know, how do we qualify this assumption that the side effects are mild?
Well, it is only in this trial that it's shown that it is mild, right, in gastro. And side effects are also a function of the dose and also a function of the duration. So this was in 5 days. You know, what I hear people are doing, taking it for prophylaxis and all that, those are much longer periods. And so you really cannot give a tick and say, well, fine, you can take ivermectin.
Can I get some guidance for people who may point to the fact that this study looked at patients who already have category 2 and 3 COVID? What about using ivermectin prophylactically, like you say, which means to prevent, if you don't already have COVID, to prevent it from developing?
Yeah, that this study does not answer that question. And it is a very good question and a timely question. And the Ministry of Health is already looking at that. The Ministry of Health, actually yesterday in Parliament, the Deputy Minister of Health announced that they are working on the approvals and they hope to study, to start this study on the prophylaxis of prophylactic use of ivermectin in patients who are in contact with a COVID-positive person. So that's the right group to try it on. And the details of that, once they get all the approvals from the government, they hope to start it in December. So that'll be a very useful study again to have some answers about the prophylactic use of ivermectin.
But right now, if somebody is considering that, what would be your advice to them?
Well, I would say don't do it. I have a number of concerns that I can list out, but I would just say some of them. Firstly, it is not proven that it works as a prophylactic. Okay, so let's wait for the evidence. Secondly, depending on the dose that you are taking, there will be side effects. And we don't know for how long you have been taking. And so that is another consideration. Now, one of the countries is Australia that has got ivermectin legally available for the treatment of scabies and parasitic infections. And they have come out with an advisory, even though ivermectin is available there, they have come out with an advisory that the dose being recommended in social media sites is higher than the dose for parasitic infections and has the potential to cause severe nausea, vomiting, dizziness, and neurological effects such as dizziness, seizures, and coma. Thirdly, you are placing scientifically unsubstantiated confidence in ivermectin. And this may result in delay in getting the required treatment. And that is dangerous. And in the process, you also may infect others in contact with you. And finally, the last point is that, you know, when you talk about prophylactic, how long are you going to take it? You know, if this is going to be endemic, are you going to take it for weeks, for months? And we don't have any studies on the safety when you're taking it for that long period, leave alone the efficacy.
So I just want to, reiterate what George said. I like that. It's not Smarties we're talking about here. We are talking about a medication. It is, classified as a poison, and its use, its sale of it should be strictly governed by law. So we'll come back and look at what exactly these laws are. If you're selling, purchasing, or even if you see it being pushed in chat groups that you're in, what exactly does this mean? We'll come back and continue the conversation together with Raja Elaine Soraya, immediate past president of the Medical Legal Society of Malaysia, together with my co-host, consultant urologist, Dr. George Lee. We're also speaking to Emeritus Professor P.T. Thomas, Executive Dean of the Faculty of Health and Medical Sciences, Taylor's University, about the use of ivermectin and what the Ministry of Health's recent study has found. So stay tuned. We'll be right back. BFM 89.9. Good afternoon. Welcome back to Health and Living with me, T. Shao-Ik, and my co-host for the Doctor in House segment, Dr. George Lee, consultant urologist. We're joined today by Emeritus Professor P.T. Thomas, Executive Dean of the Faculty of Health and Medical Sciences at Taylor's University, and Raja Elaine Soraya, immediate past president of the Medical Legal Society of Malaysia. We're discussing the Ministry of Health's recent study on ivermectin, what it found, and it concluded that the drug ivermectin does not prevent patients with COVID-19 symptoms from progressing into severe disease, and thus it should not be used to treat COVID-19 for people who have tested positive, as Prof. Thomas has explained, the Ministry of Health is next going to embark on a study to look at using ivermectin for prevention for people who have come into close contact with someone who tested positive. So the advice from Prof. Thomas here is to make your decisions based on the science. And of course, George's advice is this is not candy we're talking about. Regardless of your interpretation of what the side effects may be, if it does not show beneficial effects, there is really no point to taking something that's actually a medication, a drug. Elaine, thanks so much for your patience and staying on this conversation with us. I'd like to bring you in now to shed some light on what exactly is the legal perspective when it comes to the use of ivermectin in Malaysia. And I'm just going to set the context here. We know that ivermectin is only approved in veterinary medicine. It's only used for animals in Malaysia.
Thank you so much. I was listening to the conversation with much interest. Ivermectin is a drug that is registered in Malaysia. It's a registered drug. And the registration, the indication for registration is for veterinary purpose, basically as you've said. And it is a Group B drug, which means that it's under the Poisons Act Group B, means you can't sell the drug or you can't administer the drug without a prescription. So there is control. So what I'm trying to say is this: where it is being sold, is being given without prescription, doesn't matter ivermectin or whatever, any Group B drug, immediately it'll be that transaction is already unlawful. So therefore, one must have a prescription. And the prescription can only be given by registered doctors, right? Or registered dentists or registered practitioners. So the control, therefore, will be within the medical profession. Outside of that, anybody who sells it, if you're selling without prescription, is going to be an illegal act, full stop. Now, within the medical profession, then, when will it be, proper for a medical doctor to prescribe this drug? It would only be proper if there is sufficient medical indication for any drug, right? So then it would then be fall on that doctor or dentist to justify that prescription. That's basically where I'm coming from.
Prof, can, we do have proponents, and I think it was brought up in Parliament as well, that healthcare professionals should consider using ivermectin in off-label use. From the pharma regulatory perspective, what does this mean, especially if ivermectin is not even available for human treatment in Malaysia?
So let me answer that question about off-label, Shavik, by giving an example. In Australia, like I said, ivermectin is available and approved by the TGA, equivalent to our NPRA and DCA, as a tablet for the treatment of scabies and parasitic infections in humans. In Australia, if ivermectin is used for the treatment of prophylaxis of COVID-19, this is just an example, okay? If it is used for the treatment of prophylaxis of COVID-19, then that would be an off-label use. It is not what it was approved for, and the prescriber takes responsibility for the consequences of the off-label use. Now, in Malaysia, unfortunately, this call for off-label use of ivermectin is not possible in Malaysia because we don't have ivermectin for human use. So the question of an off-label use does not arise, you know, unless you're thinking of using a veterinary medicine for human use, which again is formulated differently. An extreme example is like thinking of using your pet food for your for humans, I won't go to the extent of saying for your baby, but, you know, it's just two different, it's formulated in different things. It may contain the drug, but it's not formulated for the digestive system or the body of humans. So I find it very difficult to understand why people talk of off-label use of a product that actually doesn't even have a label and does not exist in our country.
But the use in the clinical trial by the Ministry of Health does use the proper human formulation, right?
That's right. That's right. And that is what the DG keeps on saying. Even after the end of this trial, they say ivermectin can be used in clinical trials. So where do they get it from? They get it probably imported from another country where it is legally available. That has to undergo some kind of quality checks. Yeah, go ahead, Dr.
And Prof. Thomas, the last time we talked about this, we identified that ivermectin was quite widely available even without prescriptions, like, you know, even through the kind of like online shopping channels. So I quite like to get Elaine's perspective. It's like, first of all, do we have any idea how this can even happen in our country? And then also, what sort of like legal implication is there for somebody who actually, let's say, been harmed by the amount of ivermectin that they've taken? Is there any kind of recourse that they can take?
Hi, George. Well, to the question, how is it happening? I'm no way I'm going to answer that. How is it happening when there's a demand, there's supply, I suspect. What I think I would be slow to sort of blame is this online sort of medium. And we all know that naughty things have been happening even before the introduction of internet and all that, right? So it is very much, I think, sort of this profiteering opportunistic kind of thing. It's been there since time immemorial. And I think the fact that we now have internet and being able to buy online is just but another sort of medium, I think, of sort of naughty things happening. I'm putting it as naughty things. I'm sorry if I'm not sounding terribly lawyer-like. But in terms of what is your question, what is the recourse that one has? Obviously, when we look at the sale and purchase of drugs, and this is a drug, this is a poison under the Poisons Act, And I was listening to the word mal effects just now, and I've done, you know, I've done cases involving drugs and effects of drugs, and what could be mal for one could be terrible and death for a fatal for another. So I really think you must be responsible. But of course, again, when we have opportunities and things like that, it happens. But what is one's recourse? Well, I think it would probably depend if there is a doctor involved, for example. Then obviously, like I said, then one has the avenues of lodging complaints to the medical council, lodging police reports if there has been misrepresentation. So we've been talking a lot here about, you know, what is sort of science-based, I think, or Professor was mentioning evidence-based. So if there have been misrepresentations, for example, about miracle cures of ivermectin and so on and so forth, then they are not supported. And hence, someone has been induced perhaps to purchase and has suffered effects, then the relevant authorities could be then alerted. So complaints, pretty much, police reports, medical council complaints, and of course, civil claims if you know who sold you the drugs to begin with.
Can I, you know, seek this kind of recourse, you know, lodge these complaints, even if I don't know of any harm that has occurred?
You know, I don't think harm is a prerequisite to lodging a complaint. So the idea is that if there are reasonable grounds to believe, and I think with the widely publicized position of the Ministry of Health, hopefully the public is aware that, you know, this drug is not, I think, endorsed for use by the ministry for the cure of COVID-19, if I may put it very broadly. And if someone is saying otherwise, then that those individuals or entities should be reported. I don't think harm is a prerequisite.
Elaine, is it even illegal to have possession of ivermectin in our country at the moment?
Maybe that's a loaded question, isn't it? Because it is a registered drug. It's a registered drug. So ivermectin is a registered drug. The illegality will only happen if you're in possession of an unregistered drug. So having possession on its own will not sort of subject you to anything as long as it's a registered drug.
I'm confused. It's registered as a veterinary drug. So if I possess it in the form of human medication, it is not registered, right? Prof. Thomas, you're nodding along.
Yes.
I agree, yeah. Elaine was alluding to that. So what is registered is the veterinary drug. The human drug is not registered. So if you are in possession or if you manufacture, sell or supply or even administer an unregistered product, you are committing an offence under the, you know, what we pharmacists call CDCR, Control of Drugs and Cosmetics Regulations under the Sales of Drug Act. And so the penalties can be quite high. So it is not just prescribing, but even in possession, you are committing an offence of an unregistered product.
I just want to read this message from Nini, who says that she's not pro-ivermectin, you know, when it comes to using it for COVID, because it may harm the liver. And also her dog is taking it once a month to treat her heart. So thanks for that, Nini. Prof, we always talk about how we do have solid, you know, for the most part, we have solid laws and policies in our country, and enforcement is always the issue. So when it comes to something like this and the availability of ivermectin in its unapproved, unregistered form, whose responsibility is it to clamp down on the so-called black market?
That's a tough one to answer. I mean, it may be a cliche to say that it's everybody's responsibility, Xiaoyi, and it's everyone's responsibility not to have anything to do with unregistered products. Okay? And it's true. But the public need to be educated. At one time, the Ministry of Health, the Pharmaceutical Services Program, had a campaign called Kenali Ubat Anda, Know Your Medicines. And that told people what to look for when you buy a medicine. It's registered. Does it have a registration number? Does it have a hologram? Such educational programs and public awareness programs, even like this one that you're having today, can go a long way in educating people about the dangers of taking something that is not registered, we use the word registered in our country. Other countries say approved for sale.
Mm. Elaine, you wanted to add to that?
Well, I do think there is an extra responsibility in addition to we all, I think, have some form of sort of responsibility to ensure that, you know, we all keep each other safe. I do think there's an added responsibility on the medical profession. And I'm really saying this because when doctors say something about a drug, I'm going to believe him or her. As someone who's qualified in that profession, one needs to speak responsibly. That would be my added comment.
What could happen to a healthcare professional, for example, a doctor, if they are found guilty of selling an unregistered drug?
I'm assuming that's for me.
Yes.
Let's put it this way. Let's start with innocent until proven guilty, right? So, but basically what could happen to them? I mean, selling an unregistered drug, I mean, the offence, there are punitive criminal provisions under the Sale of Drugs Act and so on and so forth. But I think to the medical practitioner himself or herself, and this is probably more important, the licence to continue practice may be at risk because if one is brought to, say, the criminal courts for prosecution, most of the time that matter is then referred to the medical council and then one may be subject to medical council sanctions, which may include your license being at risk of being suspended and you being struck out.
And what about lay people in that similar situation? You know, we also do have uncles, aunties, I guess, well-meaning but ill-informed.
So your question is what's going to happen to the aunties and uncles?
The drug pushers, uncle and aunties.
George.
Let's not call them drug pushers. That's why I said well-meaning but ill-informed.
Yeah, what's going to happen to them? I mean, ignorance somehow is not really sort of a defense, you know. So try and keep each other informed if you do have an uncle, an auntie. And I think by and large, we have a responsibility to ensure that we get as much accurate information as we can. We pass it on, I suppose. Probably what you're doing at the moment.
But what's the punishment? I mean, really worst case scenario.
Oh, I'm not going to go there, you know, because I don't think, frankly, that the court is going to be so sort of, you know, harsh, I think, on somebody who has been duped, let's put it that way, right? Mm. So let's leave that as a grey area for now. I mean, the penalties are there. They can be quite severe. But whether or not there may be mitigating circumstances, we'll have to look at.
All right. We'll go for a quick break and come back and just sort of quickly look at, we do have exciting news regarding antivirals that have shown promise to treat COVID-19. Where can that fit into the conversation reassure people that, you know, we don't have to rely on medications that are actually unproven to treat COVID? Just wrap up the conversation after that. Together with my co-host, Dr. George Lee, we are speaking to Emeritus Professor P.T. Thomas, Executive Dean from the Faculty of Health and Medical Sciences at Taylor's University, and Raja Elaine Soraya, immediate past president of the Medical Legal Society of Malaysia. You can call us 7733-2900 or WhatsApp 018-789-8899 if you have any questions or thoughts you'd like to share. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon. Welcome back to Health and Living with me, T. Shao-Ik, and my co-host, Dr. George Lee, consultant urologist. We are speaking today to Emeritus Professor P.T. Thomas, Executive Dean of the Faculty of Health and Medical Sciences, Taylor's University, and Raja Elaine Soraya, immediate past president of the Medical Legal Society of Malaysia. We're discussing ivermectin, a hot topic in Malaysia. We are looking at what were the results of the Ministry of Health's ITEC study on the use of ivermectin in category 2 and 3 COVID-19 patients, and it was found that it doesn't prevent them from progressing to categories 4 and 5 or stage 4 and 5, and thus the Ministry of Health does not recommend the use of ivermectin to treat COVID-19. We have a question here, Prof. And just very quickly, if you could address it, and I think by distinguishing the use of ivermectin in humans, and we know that it's used in human medication for parasitic infections, and I think that might be the context that this question is coming in. This question says countries in Africa have been using ivermectin, the human formula, for umpteen years with no side effects.
Well, Chawik, I don't know whether you can... Well, first of all, it's true. Ivermectin has been used in African countries for the treatment of river blindness for many years. Now, to say that there are no side effects, I'm not sure whether that is true. Ivermectin does have side effects. Maybe it is tolerable. Maybe at the dose that is taken and for the duration it is taken, the side effects are, you know, tolerable. There, you know, every drug is taken on the basis of risk and benefit. For certain conditions, patients are willing to tolerate certain side effects because the disease has got terrible consequences. So I'm not sure whether you can say that no side effects. I would argue that there is no drug that has got no side effects.
And we have another comment, another listener who's commenting or who's asking if you can comment on the findings of the FLCCC. And I think this is the group that does talk about the use of ivermectin in COVID-19. It does come up a lot when people, you know, advocates of ivermectin use, you know, make their side of the argument. How do we weigh that against the evidence, for instance, that the Ministry of Health now has?
I'm sorry, I'm not able to comment.
We seem to have lost.
I'm not familiar with that. I only look at the evidence that is clear. I don't follow up because you can spend hours looking at different YouTube discussions and people giving their views. So I'm sorry, I cannot comment on that.
All right. Let's look very quickly, Prof, at, I guess it's still sort of on the narrative of people who do want to find this miracle drug in ivermectin. And I guess, you know, why are people still, despite, and I think internationally, the Cochrane group is also, which is considered the gold standard of study and evidence, has also said, you know, there is no evidence to show that you can use ivermectin. Now we have a Malaysian local study on our own patients also backing that up. Why are people still so desperate? And, you know, can we look to anything else to provide more hope for COVID-19?
There could be several reasons. I can just list down some of them. I mean, people may have individual reasons, but one of the main things is that people are fearful, anxious, and desperate because this is something that has taken the whole world by storm. And that we don't have a good treatment yet for the disease. We have vaccines, and people are getting afraid of being infected with it. That's one. Then there are other group of people who have doubts about the vaccines, especially the new mRNA vaccines, because it's new technology. And there are a lot of stories in the social media about this new technology. Thirdly, that people put their trust in a respected person or a professional who says that ivermectin is good. And if I don't know, then I go by the reputation of the person. And finally, of course, there is, I think this is a more recent phenomenon, there is a distrust of Big Pharma. that they are out to cheat you and try to make as much money as possible from you. But there is some hope on the horizon. There are two new drugs that are being looked at. One has molnupiravir has already been approved in the UK. It's under consideration in the US, and Paxlovid by Pfizer. These drugs are for treatment, not for prophylaxis, and they can kill the virus. Molnupiravir is effective in about 50% of patients. Paxlovid supposedly has a much higher efficacy, and the trial had to be stopped because it showed so much benefit. So with these available, probably people have more hope. But again, cost may be a factor, and people may want to look for cheaper alternatives.
Elaine, can I get you to, I guess, sort of wrap up? It's a pretty big discussion that we had with you earlier about sort of the legal frameworks, what laws you could be violating. What is a takeaway message that you give from that perspective?
If you don't mind, I would like to send a message to the medical practitioners. And my message is this: with great power comes great responsibilities. So I think as much as perhaps I may want to propose certain drugs or miracle cures, but I think for a qualified person, please, even if you feel you want to take it for yourself, do not propose it for anybody else unless the science says so. One must be extra responsible. That would be my message. I think that's not wait for, you know, for the law, whether one knows the law or not. That's not the doctor's job, but they certainly must know the science.
And who better to understand the science than trained medical professionals?
Absolutely.
Right?
And who are we to believe if not the medical professionals?
Absolutely. Prof. Thomas, we had a question just come in. So I'll just get you to quickly address that before we wrap up. Molnupiravir, the antiviral that you mentioned by Merck, has not yet been approved in Malaysia, but the government has said that it has put in an order for 150,000, right? How can the government order it if it hasn't been approved yet?
Well, we have a precedence for that. This is booking in advance with the hope that it will be approved, shall we? So we have, I think, the Malaysian government was accused of being late in ordering the vaccines. And so the vaccines went to those who ordered first and those who ordered in large quantities. So YB Kairi, I think this time, didn't want that same situation. So with the hope that it will be approved, we will, of course, have to evaluate it. We placed an advance order for 150,000. So it's not unusual. If it is found to be unsafe, I think that order will, I don't know, either we cancel it or there must be some conditions to it.
But it doesn't mean that it's leapfrogging the approval process, right?
No, not at all. I don't think we will do that. Not at all.
All right. Can we get a wrap-up message from you, Prof, to sort of give us a takeaway in the context of what we've been discussing today?
Well, I just have two things to say, shall we? One is, I really hope we will get good evidence. Actually, I hope that we will get evidence that ivermectin acts as a prophylactic. I'll be very happy because it will be a cheaper alternative and supply will not be an issue. But until then, I think we need to follow the science and trust the government regulatory agencies, the NPRA and the DCA. And finally, the second thing, please don't buy medicines, any medicines, not just ivermectin, online. You have no guarantee of what you're getting, even if the label looks authentic.
All right. Thank you so much, Prof. Elaine, you wanted to do a quick mention for people who may be interested in a webinar by the Medical Legal Society of Malaysia.
Oh, thank you so much for reminding me. I almost forgot. So Saturday on the 13th November between 2 to 5 o'clock, the Medical Legal Society of Malaysia together with the University of Malaya Law Faculty, we are organising a half-day webinar on the challenges of COVID-19 vaccinations. So we'll be talking about whether it should be made mandatory or not made mandatory. We've got a great lineup. Do join us if you're interested. You can go to our website, Medical Legal Society of Malaysia, or the University Malaya Law Faculty website. Thank you.
That's another heated debate there, isn't it?
I know. We've got so many people signed up already. It's going to be absolutely exciting. There you go.
And George, your message.
Well, I can't top that. With great power come with great responsibilities, right? I think that will just have to be the real take-home message. The only thing I can top up with is that I'm so glad the result has come out. I'm so glad that there's not too many fatality as a result of this. You know, although a lot of people say, what's a big deal when there's a smile, side effects? I really think at the end of the day, if it's not working, even taking Smarties, it comes with the price to pay.
Thank you so much, everyone. You know, my co-host has been with me on the show, Dr. George Lee, consultant urologist, and Raja Elaine Soraya, immediate past president of the Medical Legal Society of Malaysia, as well as Emeritus Professor P.T. Thomas, executive dean from the Faculty of Health and Medical Sciences from Taylor's University, tackling the difficult topic of ivermectin in the use for treating COVID-19. Ministry of Health says no. Stay tuned. You know, we will, keep our eye on the upcoming study that the Ministry of Health is doing about prevention of COVID-19. And, we will get the experts back on to discuss that when it does, when the study does wrap up. So you've been listening to Health and Living on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.